Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to our second monthly ladies' lunch. It is a delight to look out over this room and see so many beautiful women here just enjoying time together and coming to hear from our speaker. I am Katie Freer. I am the Director of Women's Ministry here at St. Philip's. So if you don't yet know me, please don't hesitate to introduce yourself. I would love to get to know you better and see how I can help you get more connected to the church. So I am available. I'm here on staff throughout the week, and you'll also see me on Sundays with my four children often going in many directions. but come and say hello to me when you have a chance. Our next ladies' lunch is going to be scheduled for May 12th. So go ahead and put that on your calendar. That will be the last one for the spring semester. And we will have a wonderful speaker, I'm sure, though I don't yet know who she will be. But our speaker today comes to us having been in Charleston for many years, having left and gone on to other pursuits and then come back home. But I am very, very excited. I'm going to read our Amy's bio that Brian very kindly put together for us so we can hear a little bit more about her. And then I'm going to turn it over to her daughter-in-law, Jane McGreevy, who is going to do this particular talk interview style. So I can't wait to hear Amy's story. But Amy Jones McGreevy was born in Atlanta, Georgia in 1930 and is about to celebrate her 96th birthday in May. A graduate of Agnes Scott College and holding a graduate degree from Emory University, Amy spent much of her childhood at her family's place on the Chattahoochee River near West Point, Georgia. She taught high school in Atlanta and met a young Army officer there named Ken McGreevy on a blind date, and they were married in 1954. They moved to Charleston and brought up their two children, Brian and Mary Beth, here, before Ken's career as an insurance executive took them to New Jersey once the children were grown. Ken and Amy returned to Charleston and to St. Philip's in 2015. Ken passed away in 2019 after 64 years of marriage. Always active in the church, Amy has led women's groups and served in leadership of church women at the parish and diocesan level in several states, as well as serving as a lay reader and with Altar Guild and Flower Guild. An avid reader, she still maintains an active devotional life and assists with leading chapel services at Sandpiper Cooper River Villages. She is the happy matriarch of her family, which now includes seven grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Jane to lead our interview. Thank you.
Is it on? It's on?
Okay. And she's on too? Okay, great. All right. Well, welcome everyone. We're so happy to be here. And I will say, you can thank me or not, but it was my idea to have you speak. And because I have been blessed by this lady for 43 years. Well, maybe 45. I've probably known you for 45 years. And she has so much wisdom and joy and so many other things to share. And so I'm just so thrilled to get to share a little bit about her with y'all. And she will share. I grew up, I had great family, great parents, but I did not grow up in a Christian home. And so I had no doubt I was loved and everything like that, but I did not have role models of how do you raise a family with Christian values. And so I have learned a lot from Amy over the years and just from watching the McGreevy family and how they operate.
She has been a wonderful mother-in-law, as I have now gotten to be a mother-in-law, and I feel like she's been a great role model for me, and she has always supportive. This is terrible. I don't want to cry. But always supportive. You know, she might have her opinions, but she's very gracious and withholding them. So, but there is so much that I admire about her. And Katie and I had a brief meeting before so Katie could get to know Amy a little bit. And I like to tell this story that Katie said, well, I want to know a little bit about your story. And so Amy promptly said, well, I had scarlet fever when I was 5. And we thought, well, she was going to start at 5. But that will come up in her story a little bit, the scarlet fever. It was a significant thing. Oh, thank you. But so as I was thinking through our conversation and some questions we had, trying to sort of make this more concise, because you will learn if you get to know Amy, and my daughter and daughter-in-law could definitely attest to, she could tell you stories for a long time. And so we have to figure out how to keep it in the time we have allotted today. But one of the things that has struck me over these years with Amy is that she is committed to the Lord as her number one priority. And, okay, so good. Before I start crying, here's a good question for you. You ready? So was there a particular time that you would say your faith was born or became more important to you?
Again.
Was there a particular time in your life when your faith was born or became more important to you?
I would think that it would be the time that my father was so very ill. And I'll tell you the little background. The war was, I was about 15, that would be 1945. So there are a few of you here who remember that war. My father was a doctor and he was able to have a car. So we went, I didn't go, he and my mother went to Atlanta to purchase a car. But my father had great difficulty with his feet because a friend of his had given him x-ray for his athlete's foot, and there was no way to treat it at that particular time. So my mother said, why don't we go by Emory and have one of your doctor friends there look at your feet? So they did. And my mother said, my father came out of the doctor's office and he was white as a sheet and trembling. And he said, Marion, he has said that I need to go to Johns Hopkins today and have my legs amputated to the knee. Wow. Mother said, Henry, one day is not going to make a difference. Is there someone in Birmingham that you might trust as much as this friend? And Daddy said yes. So they went to the Birmingham hospital the next day, and he said, Henry, it's going to be tricky, but I think I can save your legs and part of your feet if I amputate your toes. So there we were. We just didn't know what to do. We were afraid we were going to lose our father. We prayed and we prayed. My father's first cousin, who was married to a minister, went to his side and they prayed pretty much day and night. I made a cake and I've covered it with wet cloths so that it would still be moist when he came home. But I knew if I prayed enough that God would spare my daddy, and he did. And my daddy always had told me that the happiest man in his whole life had been his father, because his father believed without a doubt in this world that God was going to take care of him, that nothing could happen to him because he loved God and God loved him. Mm-hmm. And so around the age of 15, I became very close to my Lord. Mm.
That's a wonderful story. I wondered if there were other particular people in your life over your 95 years who have influenced you most in your faith.
I think the person who influenced me most in my faith, and it's probably the same with a lot of you, was my mother. Mm-hmm. When I was 5 years old, I had scarlet fever. And back in those days, you either died or you got well. And my mother talked to me, and she told me the little stories that people tell children, small children, about Jesus. Mother had me loving Jesus so much that I said, "Oh, Mama, maybe I'll die so I can see Jesus." So my mother read me a lot of poetry, too. She was just a wonderful example of a loving Christian mother. Mm.
That's wonderful. Good inspiration for many of us. Another thing that I know has always been a priority in your life is prayer. And it's been a great comfort to me to know that you're praying, I believe, daily for me and for your family. Can you tell us a little what your prayer life looks like, your personal prayer life?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say a little poem for you. I met God in the morning when my day was at its best, and His presence came like sunrise, like a glory in my breast. All day long, His presence lingered. All day long, He stayed with me. And we sailed in perfect calmness o'er a very troubled sea. Other ships were blown and battered. Other ships were sore distressed. But the winds that seemed to drive them brought to us a peace and rest. And now I know the secret, learned from many a troubled way. You must meet God in the morning if you want Him through the day. I heard that. I heard that poem fairly early in my life, and I pretty much adopted it. And then the same author wrote another one about nighttime or noontime. And that was saying that you didn't need God just in the morning, but you needed Him all of the time. And so that's why I learned that you needed to pray in the morning and at noon and in the evening. And probably if you were playing bridge, maybe you might say, "Help."
I would need a lot of help. That would be, yeah. That's so great. I know that church was always a family priority, and that you never missed church. Even if you were on vacation, you were attending church. And you moved around several times in your life as an adult. And was there one church in particular of the ones you've been a part of that especially meant the most to you?
This may surprise you, but it was a church in New Jersey. But when I moved to New Jersey from Charleston, the tears ran down my face when I was leaving my home. But I lived in a town called Little Silver, and Little Silver had about 5,000 people. And every one of those people was a kind, gentle person, I do believe. I have never been so welcomed anywhere in my life. People, we met in each other's homes. We played bridge together. The minister at Christmas time and at Thanksgiving gave a large dinner. I mean, he was single, so he didn't have a family, so he cooked for his family. And if you didn't have a place to go at Thanksgiving or Christmas, you ate dinner with him. He had us come into his office for our Bible study. I just can't begin to tell you the closeness of that community and the feeling that everybody was loved by God equally. It didn't matter who you were, where you came from, how old you were, how young you were, everybody loved everybody. Mm. I said, it was perfect.
Wow.
I had cried when I left there, too.
God had a sense of humor, didn't he? Okay, that's so wonderful. One of the things I know about you is that you have a true sense of appreciation of beauty, and that may involve your house decorating. It often involves your clothes, and how has God used that appreciation of beauty in your life?
Well, just like you, I was a little girl, and I looked around, and I saw the stars at night. I lived in a little town, and you could lie out on the lawn, and there weren't lights everywhere, and the stars were everywhere. And then I had a pet lightning bug who used to come. I was sure it was the same lightning bug. And I would talk to that little lightning bug. I sat on the grass, and I told them a little poem that I wrote, and they said, well, I should say it, so I will. What are you, little green blade, that you should know of God, of things God made? I like to sit on you in the hot summertime when the dew has kissed you with a kiss of lime. I like to sit and listen as you whisper soft and low, telling me the many things that only grass could know. Oh, grass, you are no lesser thing to me, for men have died and you have lived throughout eternity. Now, this is an 11-year-old's poem, it was beautiful. Life was beautiful. There were lakes, and then I came to the seashore, and there was the ocean, and God made that. And there was the song of the birds. Everything was beautiful. And then my mother read me all that poetry. My mother read me A Child's Garden of Verses, and I know some of you know that well. My mother read me Eugene Field. I know that you know that. My mother took me to Montgomery to see Colleen Moore's Dollhouse, which was a thing of great beauty. Did any of you see that at all? Colleen Moore was a wonderful movie star, and she had this. It's in Chicago now. It's in the Chicago, you know it. And it's so beautiful. Everything in it is just perfect. I saw so many beautiful things when I was young. How could you not appreciate God's glorious world?
That's a good question. I know you've instilled that love in your son, for sure. If anybody's known Brian for 5 minutes, you've heard him talk about beauty and truth and goodness. So, and with the beauty, it's interesting to me the connection between beauty and poetry. And I guess, I know we have some English, former English teachers in here. And so you learn to appreciate words, I guess, in poetry. Is that, where did your love of poetry come from? Your mother?
Where did my love of poetry come from? Well, as I said, my mother read to me. You know that line, richer than I, you cannot be. I had a mother who read to me. Oh, yes. And certainly all of you young women read to your children. I think that had a lot to do with it. I had a 9th grade English teacher named Elise Gannon. And Miss Gannon even had the boys in our class liking the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. So, you know, when the boys begin to appreciate poetry, somebody's doing something right. The Bible is full of poetry. There are all of those wonderful psalms in the Bible, and we learned that in church school. I don't see how you cannot be stirred by poetry. And there's a poet I have not read. I asked my granddaughter to order me one of her books, and she has. but I've read 3 different novels, and each novel said something about Mary Oliver. And after I read the first book, it said Mary Oliver, and the second one said Mary Oliver, and the third one said Mary Oliver. And then Brian McGreevy sent me a poem that someone had read at one of those meetings that those priests have. And it was by Mary Oliver. So even though I've not gotten her book yet, you all be on the lookout for Mary Oliver.
Has anybody in here read Mary Oliver? I know a lot of, yeah, okay, so, all right. One of the things close to your love of God was your love and commitment to the family. And I know that you and Ken adored each other. He, one of my sister-in-law on my other side, used to love to watch Ken take care of Amy. And he was. He was very adoring. And my daughters could testify to that for sure. But tell me, well, you told Katie and me a story about your dating life. So I was wondering if you would share that story about that man before.
Oh,
him.
Yes. Well, when I was in graduate school, and I'll talk about that later, but that has nothing to do with that. I really didn't have a particular boyfriend, but I looked at the Emory Annual, and I picked out what I thought was the best-looking boy in the Emory Annual. And that year, I actually did sit next to him at a meal in the cafeteria, and somebody introduced us, and I was so disappointed that he was so much shorter than he looked like he was. But anyway, then I finished and I was moving into my apartment and I went to the post office and he was there and he said, well, could I help you move in? Oh, I thought, this is nice. So he did and we began dating and we dated off and on for about a year. I really liked him, but I knew he didn't really like me a whole lot. And then at the end of the year, I will say this was our last date, he said, I've got to really start working. He was in dental school. I have 2 more years and I've got to work really hard, and so I won't be calling you anymore. Oh, I was devastated. I was heartbroken. You cannot imagine, because this was the first time I'd ever really felt like I really, really loved somebody. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I cried and I cried and I said, oh God, I just don't even want to live. I mean it. I was decimated. And God said to me, live. I mean, in no uncertain terms, he said, live. And you know, I prayed and I didn't pray for that boy anymore. I prayed that God would bring somebody new into my life. That would be even more wonderful than this. And guess what? 6 months later, 6'2 arrived. And 6'2 was the best thing that ever happened to me.
He was a wonderful man. Well, tell me about what do you think... what made your marriage strong? What would be your advice to people in marriages?
Oh, what made my marriage strong? The second time I went out with 6'2", we went to church. He told me of his faith. And we dated on the weekends because he was living in Augusta, Georgia, and I was living in Atlanta, Georgia. So our dates were weekend dates, and we never had a date that we didn't go to church. He was a very committed Christian, and that made it much easier for me. The children, somebody asked why Mary Beth and Brian always went to church and Sunday school. That's because we did. It didn't occur to us that you didn't. Okay?
Right. just what you did. You get up every Sunday and do that. Yeah. All right. One of the things that I love about you, and I know the children and grandchildren do, are your stories. And you have some great stories, and I think you feel like God has really protected you along the way. And it's kind of what you were saying, I think, about with scarlet fever, is you learned then that God is going to take care of you and protect you. And do you have anything else you want to share about, like, how you really learned to trust him?
About what?
How you learned just to rely on the Lord and to trust him.
Oh, my goodness. I do have some stories. The first year I was at Agnes Scott, I lived across the hall from the bathroom. I lived in a single. Light wakes me up because the bathroom light. The door opened, and I looked up, and a man was standing in the door. So I looked at him, and I said, "What are you doing in here?" And he said, "Oh, excuse me," and left. Other girls were not so fortunate. He went in two other rooms. There was a trial, and he was shot in the leg, and he rolled down the hill. But God protected me that time, and I was so grateful for that. Fast forward, and now I'm living in an apartment with my cousin and another Agnes Scott girl. And my cousin gets up to go to work, and all her purse is gone, and all of the money that she had that she was taking to go on her vacation that afternoon after she left work was gone. Evidently, there had been a burglar. So we decided we'd put this big fan in front of the double doors so the burglar couldn't get in anymore. Well, I'm asleep, and then it seems to be about 4:00 in the morning, and I see somebody over at my desk. And I think, well, that's Tappy. She's going, I say, "Tappy." And I pretended to be asleep because I could tell it was a man. He walked across the room from the desk right to my bed, stood right over me, and I was going and praying like mad. And after a while, he turned and left. He got away with 15 pocketbooks, but he left. God protected me then. I did have another burglar, but the alarm went off, so God protected me with the alarm. But I've always felt that God watched over me.
Well, one of the things I really appreciate are sharing stories, and that's one reason I wanted you to share with the ladies today, because you have those stories. And in 95 years, you've seen some things. And so it's a great charge to us to tell stories that show God's faithfulness, to show things that God has done in our lives. And so I feel like you may not feel like an evangelist, but even if you're just sharing these stories of things where you've seen God come to your rescue and be there for you, it's wonderful. Well, I think we're about out of time, but I wonder if you have any... what would be your, here's a question I hear sometimes. What would you tell your younger self about life?
What would I tell my younger self about life? I would say that life is good if you walk with Jesus. If you walk with the Lord, life will always be good. You may be buffeted about by... I haven't told you several things that happened to me. I've got to do this. I had, after I got to be 65, I went to the doctor and I had a problem with my gallbladder. And he was going to do that little easy way, and then he took it out. And then I went back to see him. And he said to me, "You're dying. You're already turning yellow and I can't do anything about it. And it may happen that if you go to Emory that they could possibly do something. So I went to Emory. And there was a wonderful young man there who was a doctor, and his father had run a hardware store, and he said it's much easier to work around in people's insides than under houses. But anyway, he prayed with me, and his staff prayed with me, and 10 hours later, I came out of the operating room, and here I am today. Now, a while later, maybe 10 years later, I'm probably 75 now, my husband is sitting next to a friend at Rotary, and the friend said, Ken, have you ever had your wife's heart checked? And he said, no. He said, well, you go home and do it. He said, my wife died. I'd never had her heart checked. So Kenneth came home, and he called his doctor, and I went down there, and he said, well, he said, it looks all right to me, but just to be on the safe side, maybe you'd better go to Emory. So we get in the car, and we go to Emory. The head of the heart department sees me, and he said, Ms. McGreevy, you're just in luck. He said, we have a team standing by now, and you can go right in. Well, I didn't have any say-so. I just went in. 5 bypasses later, I came out. And so God saved my life another time. Don't tell me that if you love God, that he doesn't help you. You all know about my granddaughter-in-law,
who
maybe most of you do. She was at Northside, and they said, you go into hospice. We can't do anything for you. You need a liver transplant, but that probably wouldn't help. She said, I don't want to die. I don't want to go into hospice. They said, well, we can't do anything. We'll call Emory and see if they can do it. No, they can't take you. So her husband said, let's call Uncle Brian. And they called Uncle Brian, and Uncle Brian said, well, I'm going to call Mary Hollis. So Mary Hollis studies about it a while, and she calls her father, and she says, that's somebody that you know. That's somebody you could get in touch with. He said, well, there is this doctor I could call. So he called him, and he told him that 8 of us had gone to Emory, and that we gave a scholarship at Emory, and that we would be so appreciative if Emory could take this child. And the head of development called Brian back, or he called Brian back, and he said, we will be glad to take your niece, and a room will be ready for her. And she went over. About 4 or 5 days later, she was at the top of the transplant list. She had a transplant. Guess who just went to the Masters? In a wheelchair, but went to the Masters. God be praised.
That's a great, great way to end it. God be praised. And he has certainly been glorified in your life.
Thank you both, Amy. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Jane, thank you for helping to pull it out and weave it together, and for your wonderful suggestion that we have Amy up here. I am so deeply grateful to have heard this and to be encouraged by it, to be encouraged to have faith in the Lord, to trust Jesus, to walk with him, and to look for the beauty and the truth and the goodness that is all around us. And I look around this room and I see it here in abundance. So thank you all for coming. I hope I will see you all on May 12th. Come and get to know me, get to know the other women at your table and here at St. Philip's Church. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.